the cause of trying to be an advocate and to help someone in need should there be a presence in one's life. So we are very pleased to be able to use our airwaves in this discussion today to talk about this very powerful and important subject matter and also some of the things related to it. Oftentimes when we start on the topic of suicide prevention, it does go hand in hand with mental illness, mental wellness, as well as a number of other depression and anxiety disorders and so on. But we really hope in this hour that you're going to learn some tools, some resources, and also a little bit of just sort of humanity and understanding that this is not something we want to look away from, be afraid of, step back from and say, this can't happen to me or anybody I know, so I don't want to deal with it. That's really what awareness is trying to combat and trying to counter. So we have decided to break our discussion today into a couple of sessions. A little later on in our program, you're going to hear from the head of our student outreach and support here at Henry Ford College, Brenda Hildreth. Dr. Hildreth will talk about resources available exclusive to our campus community and also some external ones as well. But before then, we want to get into talking about a local nonprofit that has made it their goal. They have dedicated their time to educating our community about depression as a life-threatening disease and the potential that could come along with it, which is suicide. So, Alan, I'll let you jump in at this point, but I'll tell you, this is important stuff. And as you indicated, probably one of the most, if not the most important discussion we will have this year on the WHFR Journal.
Well, our guests today include Catherine Galdez, who is a board member for the Bethany Ann Galdez Foundation, and Maria Evans, one of their clinical therapists. We'll start, first with Ms. Galdez, the foundation, the sad reasons that it exists, and the work that that it does.
Yes, so the Bethany Ann Galdez Foundation was founded by a number of people who knew Bethany years ago. Bethany struggled with depression, and she didn't always look depressed, right? She could be walking down the hall smiling and laughing, and so people would say she's not, depressed. But people with depression often work really hard to hide their depression or to fit in or to look like what they're expected to look like. So Bethany was struggling with depression, and she had been hospitalized twice. And even though the hospitalizations kept her safe, as she came out of the hospital, she had not really had treatment that could be used during hospitalization and after hospitalization. So there's so many things you can do for depression that a lot of times they're waiting till after your discharge to begin. And we at the Bethany Foundation feel strongly that when someone is in a crisis and they end up in the hospital, that we should begin using all of those therapies. One of the problems with hospitalization at this time is that the hospital is meant to care for anybody in crisis with any sort of a mental health disorder. It's not specific to someone with schizophrenia or specific to somebody with, anger outburst disorder or somebody with grieving or somebody with depression. And just like we have places for people with diabetes and somewhere different that someone goes with a heart defect or somewhere different for people with cancer, we should have these specialized places for people with depression and with schizophrenia. And we have them like for people with bipolar or depression, but only outpatient, not when they're in the real crisis point. If someone's in a real crisis and they're thinking about dying by depression, then they end up in the hospital, and it could be against their will or against their parents' will. So Bethany did struggle quite a while with depression, and we were trying to find different things for her and trying to have the supports and the access to the kinds of therapies that we knew from reading research. I had worked in a hospital, but I hadn't realized the need for having the specialization when I was working there. When Bethany was 16. She died by suicide. And those of us that had been working really hard to help her while she was alive wanted to help the next group of people who might be struggling to help their loved one. And you, we talk about people thinking that they might never have to deal with this and they don't have to listen to it. That's awareness. That's really, it's a great thing to bring up, because if you look at the statistics and you listen or you read any of the research, there's about 1 out of 4 students, 1 out of 4 young people will think about dying or have severe depression and not speak out about it. There's a terrible stigma around mental health. So people are not seeking the help all the time. And so everybody should be aware that there are people around them. If you look in a room and you're a room full of 8 people that are young, 2 of those people might have been thinking about dying by suicide somewhere in the recent, you know, in their high school career, right? Even if you go into a typical statistics and you're in a room of 25 people, there are probably 2 people in that room of 25 people who are at that time suffering with some sort of depression or mental health that is giving them thoughts about dying by suicide. We should always be listening for someone to let them know how important they are, right? Because we want to do that while they're alive and still here. Let them know how important they are to us and how much better the world is because they are in it. So this is why we started the foundation. And we really hope to educate the public about depression and about that it's a life-threatening disease and that you don't always look like you're in crisis, but there are 7 pillars that we call it that we feel are really important. Aunt Maria can tell us more about.
Yes. So the Bethany Ann Galdez Foundation, as Kathy was saying, really seeks to create a center for people who are in acute distress with thoughts of wanting to harm themselves and thoughts of dying by suicide. And like she mentioned, here in Michigan, as a clinical therapist, currently, I don't have any other options except for hospitalization. And so, you know, most of the time it is just to keep them safe for that short term, because what we also saw during this pandemic is hospital beds were very limited. People were waiting long amounts of times just to even get a bed. Some people never got a bed and waited in the ER for days. So having a place that someone can go, not only to keep themselves safe, but to also learn many key elements that go into building a life worth living, building a very healthy future for themselves. And so, as Kathy mentioned, those 7 pillars are of sleep. You know, sleep is such a crucial one in terms of overall physical and mental health. Proper nutrition, purposeful engagement with others, therapy that people feel connected with, right? Knowing that outpatient therapy, the connection, research shows, is the most important piece. And so if you're not connecting with your therapist, it's okay to do something that I call therapist shopping. Find that right fit. Going back to the pillars, also physical movement, prescriptive exercise is what we're talking about when we say physical movement, because everybody needs something slightly different when it comes to physical movement for their mental health. Connectiveness, and spirituality.
Each of those topics separately, I'm feeling a break off our discussion because they're so important, you know, clearly and so fundamental to wellness and health. And we just to keep the context here that we are sort of having this discussion in the context of sort of a springboard that despite Bethany's passing, she can continue to be an inspiration and guide this purposeful mission, which is why the name Bethany Ann Galdez Foundation, of course. So, Kathy, thank you for telling that story. I know how I can understand how painful that must be for you. But I also thank you for telling the story because of the fact that it is causing other people to feel some of that. My eyes are they're a little teary right now, but maybe that's a good thing because it sort of makes us feel something and it makes us connect with the fact that this is real. The stats you shared are real. They're disturbing. They're alarming. This happens more than anybody would want to admit. And tossing it in a corner, putting a blanket over it is not the solution based on your foundation and based on what the experts are telling us. So we're so grateful for that. Maria, in talking about these seven pillars as a clinical therapist, do you find that there is one that is, it just literally here in late 2022 that is standing out beyond many of the other ones? For me, I hear you started with sleep as one of the pillars. I know students that I deal with, and they are exhausted, and then they wonder why they can't think clearly and focus properly, and then they go to the energy drinks and all this crazy stuff, and it's like, oh goodness, this is probably not good for you. But what would you say in dealing with this on a daily basis as a part of your work and your practice should be or might be at this time one of the most mission critical?
Yeah, what a great question. Because as you were mentioning, right, sleep is a big one. Right now in this time, though, and what I've seen in my clinical practice, I would have to say the pillar of connectedness is probably the biggest one, especially as we are starting to come out of a lot of the pandemic restrictions that we've had. You know, there's been research that shows one of the things that help people live longest isn't actually things that we might think of off the top of our head, like how is our overall physical health, how much exercise are we getting? The actual number one thing is how many connections do we make in a day? You know, before the pandemic, you'd go out and on your way to class, school, work, whatever it may be, you might pass hundreds of people, maybe nod, smile at a couple. Now in the pandemic, many of us are still virtual. We're starting to have more classes in person. Some work is coming back in person, but we just don't feel connected like we used to. And I think that's really having a major impact on mental health right now.
When I look at the website, I see a butterfly. I see a butterfly with wings that are separated, but it's still a butterfly. I'm sure there's a reason behind that, and I'd love to hear about it, Kathy. As this organization was being put together by, as you indicated, a group of people, like-minded people that wanted to educate the public about depression as a life-threatening disease and to help and prevent it from happening to others. What was that process like in figuring out that's a giant thing to undertake, and it's been going strong for a long time now. So what you're doing is successful. How did this part start for you?
Thanks for asking. That's really kind of a happy memory, some of that, right? So Bethany would raise butterflies. We would go camping, and there was this huge milkweed field, and butterflies would land on the milkweed where they'd lay these little teeny tiny eggs. And she would go and she would pick the leaf. And we would have this collection of leaves in a Tupperware, right, that we took home. And those little tiny white specks would grow into little tiny, teeny tiny caterpillars you could barely see. And sometimes Bethany found the caterpillar. Sometimes she found the egg, but she took care of them. They ate those leaves up and she put more leaves in, and they would grow and they would get really big and fat. And then they would turn into the J, right? And turn into a chrysalis. And when they came out, there were these butterflies. And so the butterflies would let her hold them in her hands, and they would land on her back and on her hair. I have these pictures of her with these butterflies, and I'm sorry if I'm going on, but this is a great memory. I used to call her my peanut because she had this little tiny voice when she was young, and she was just a little she was small, right? We're small in stature in my family, but She used to call my peanut. And so when her butterflies hatched one time when she was at band camp, I called her up to say, "Oh, you're our peanut butterfly mama now, that's her butterflies had hatched." And she's like, "Well, make sure you're feeding them, you know." So she was all about taking care of the butterflies. But you know, when after she died, someone gave me an ornament that said, was of a butterfly, my sister-in-law Cindy, and said on it, "Without change, there can be no butterfly," right? So it's really difficult, right? And that phrase, "without change, there can be no butterfly," can mean so many things. It's so applicable. So like, without change in our way of treating depression, without change in the way someone is living, without change, there can be no butterfly. Our young children will not necessarily become the butterfly, right, that they're supposed to be here on this earth. Like, we're all becoming who we are, right? Every day we're learning new things. We're discovering new things about ourselves and how to interact and understanding more about the world. But it takes growth, continual growth. And we have to embrace that change, as stressful as it is, because change, whether it's for good or for bad, it's always stressful. So that's where the butterfly came. And Bethany had actually had some art also that she had done of imprints of masks and of butterfly that looked like butterfly wings. And so I had a graphic artist friend who merged all those things. Stacy really was great. She put this beautiful art together. And Jay,
Susan, look at the negative space between the halves of the butterfly wings, and I believe you see two faces facing each other. Is that correct?
Yes, there it is.
How she did it. It was amazing that,
oh my gosh,
that it's faces. And there goes back to that connection, right? Like, we become butterflies because of our connections with people, and that we help other people become butterflies because of our connection, just as much as they help us. All that reaching out, like, and connecting. I think that one of the really important things I want to convey from the foundation is that we, as a human being, because you care, you're qualified to intervene and to help somebody who might be struggling with depression, right? Whether they confided to you, you know, I'm really struggling with depression, or I'm really having these horrible thoughts, or whether they've just said something like, I don't really care about this project in school because, you know, I'm not even going to be here. And we're right, that there is like this invitation. It's, they're kind of saying something to you in a covered way. And it's an invitation for you to say, well, why are you saying that? Are you saying that because you're thinking about dying? If things get so bad that you're thinking about dying, I hope you tell me. I hope you reach out to me, right? And then ask them about why. All it takes sometimes is that listening to the story. Well, tell me what's going on. Why is it so hard right now, right? And they know somebody cares, and it makes a big difference in a person's life that you've said that you've reached out. And then therapy does not have to be something that you attend only when you're in crisis, right? Doesn't have to be, "I'm thinking about dying right now, I need a therapist." It can be like, I'm having really bad days, and this is getting to be something I really wish I had someone to talk to. It should be like going to the dentist. Going to your therapist should be like saying, "Oh, I got to go to my dentist appointment today." It should be like that when you're saying, "Oh, I'm going to go to my therapist today." Right?
I couldn't agree more, Kathleen.
It's like really Catherine, important.
I was going to say, Catherine Geldes and Maria Evans are our guests today on the WHFR Journal. Catherine is the board member at the Bethany Ann Geldes Foundation, also Bethany's mother. Maria Evans is a clinical therapist with the organization. For more information on the Bethany Ann Geldes Foundation, you can visit their website at bagaldesfoundation.org. I'll spell it BAGALDES. Foundation.org. I'm also on the WHFR website. I'll put that up on our playlist so that you can have a spelling. And yes, please, Catherine, go ahead. Yep. What's that?
All right. So I have to tell you, I really feel horrible when I ask people to support us financially, because I believe every other kind of support is really important and I don't want to discourage it. But we are, for the first time this year, we'll be having a fundraiser. We've never held fundraisers. We've held events. They're always free. But we will be having a fundraiser this year because we're trying to get the building so that we can open up the doors of the foundation. And the only way we can do that is if we can show regular income. So if you can go on and commit to donating $1, 50 cents, $5, whatever you can on a monthly basis, we can demonstrate we have income so we can pay for the rent and the, we can pay for the heating and we can pay for everything that will be a regular cost in that.
Well, and that's a perfect like lead into exactly what I was going to say is the your vision for the mission of the foundation. Is it raising awareness? Is it getting people to have access to the treatment they need? Is it multifaceted in all of those different ways?
Right. Our main overarching goal is that we be able to provide a space for people to go to instead of a hospital. If they were in crisis and they were thinking about dying by suicide at that time, they shouldn't, because of depression, that they should not necessarily have to go to a hospital. They can go to somewhere less restrictive, and that's specifically designed for someone with depression. And that would be the Bethany Ann Galdez House, like the Bethany House. I actually don't care if it's called by that or if it's opened by us. We just need help opening it. There needs to be this place, right? We want it where it can do all the work on teaching all those pillars and where it can provide a safe space and where we can start making progress and have connections.
And Maria, you being on the clinical board of directors, I suppose that's more of the face-to-face, what people are going to experience either at that house or before it opens in the immediate moment.
Exactly.
I was looking on the website a little bit earlier, and
I do have that up in the playlist module, by the way. So if you go to our website, whfr.fm, and it should show up there in terms of now playing on, if for listeners who've been to our website, there will be that website just because it's, instead of having to spell it a bunch of times, but it's bagaldezfoundation.org.
Thank you. Oh, that's awesome, Alan. Thank you so much. One of the things that I see in a number of different areas when we're talking about suicide prevention, we're talking about depression, anxiety, that kind of thing, is the comparison to what we would consider to be externally obvious illnesses or issues, health issues. Like if someone has, if they have a physical disability where we see them in a wheelchair, or we see them with a limp, or we see them with a cut on their face, or we see them, you know, those are the ones that's like, oh gosh, you know, they tend to get that extra attention because they're tangible. And even in the start of our discussion, Kathy, with what you said about sort of that thing that, depression doesn't necessarily look like depression. And you know, what does that even mean? What does that even look like? So being able to get a community of, you know, hopefully supportive, kind human beings that want to be the best they can be and help the best they can, to be aware of that, I think is huge. So that awareness component that you have built in, and so many other wonderful organizations trying to accomplish these tasks of changing a population who has long believed that some of this is just not real or just doesn't need the specialization that you're talking about that it actually does. So you have a clinical board, you have an administrative board, and then on this website, you have just a variety of different ways of talking about the same issue, which I think is wonderful because not everybody learns the same way and everybody's coming to this at a different place. Clearly, your message is from experience and a terrible, tragic, horrific springboard that has catapulted you to be doing what you're doing. And Maria, your life's purpose, I'm sure, through education and schooling brought you here as well. But so many people will be finding this at different places in their existence, you know, in their world for different reasons. So tackling it from a bunch of angles seems so critically important. Maria, in your experience, first things to do when someone is seeing potential signs from either a classmate, a colleague, a friend, a family member, what do we do first to jump in?
Great question, Susan. First thing is to open up conversation with that person. whether it's saying like, hey, I noticed that you're not attending classes like you used to attend, you know, I'm worried about you. How are things going? Just letting them know that you are here. Depression itself, one of the main symptoms is feeling very isolated. So by opening conversation, again, like actually stating, I am here for you if you need someone to talk to, reminding them that now we have the 988 number. So instead of having to remember a longer telephone number, it's just 988. And you can call it if somebody is feeling actively suicidal. People can call it if they're feeling overwhelmed. It's really just for mental health struggles in general. So yes, opening conversation is a big one.
And that 988 number just came into being, I guess, earlier this year as well. I'm assuming something that is probably well welcomed within your clinical therapist
very
community,
so.
There, Maria. Yes, right.
A lot of times, it's really good to know the 988, not just because you're the person who's thinking about suicide at the time, but if you are with someone who is in danger at the moment. You can call the 988 and talk to someone on the phone about what you might be able to do for them. Or if they need to get someone to intervene, they aren't necessarily going to have to call the police, which are not the appropriate people, right? So don't be afraid to call 988 to talk about somebody else thinking that that means the police are going to come, because it's not. This is a more appropriate way to respond to people who are having a mental health crisis.
That's an excellent point. The diagnosis component of different areas of mental health and mental illness, I'm sure, must be critically important, but also very difficult. And would you speak to that, Maria, just a little bit? How relevant, how important, how effective, how good are we at diagnosing these kinds of things?
Yeah. It's really important to get a diagnosis from a licensed mental health professional, because then it can open up avenues for treatment that otherwise wouldn't be open. So things like, some people find medication very helpful. In fact, a combination of medication and outpatient therapy is found to be one of the most helpful forms of treatment, especially for depression. I know that there's a lot of information now online in this effort to break stigma and to be able to open conversations about mental health. It's still very important, though, to see a licensed professional as soon as you start to notice symptoms appearing. So many of the clients that I see apologize to me saying, oh, I'm not sure if this is like big enough to come talk to you yet. And I'm like, if you think there is an issue, I am so glad that you are here talking to me today. If there's like one big thing to remember, in addition to everything that Kathy has mentioned so far today, it's don't wait. Get the help when you feel you need the help. Don't wait.
I don't like it when people usually say be strong. I've kind of changed it into that. Be strong enough to ask for help, right? Don't just be strong enough to ask for help.
That's
don't just have courage, right? Have the courage to talk about what's happening.
So, Catherine, we have a few minutes left, and it seems like certainly this horrible, tragic event has put you on a path to try to make something good and build something, and you're certainly dreaming big on it. So let's say 20, 25 years from now, when you're executive director emeritus on the board of the foundation, where do you hope that it will be?
Oh my gosh. I hope that we will have the space for somebody who is in a crisis and thinking about dying by suicide. And we will have community connections that go beyond that, so that when somebody is a caregiver, they have somewhere to go and talk to other people. Once you're not in a crisis, you have somewhere to go to continue on whatever therapy and whatever treatments you've used. I hope that we have this great area of places of connections in the community, of wraparound with the school. And I hope that it can be duplicated for all ages, that the specificity is happening, that there are centers for places for people in crisis with schizophrenia, with depression, with autism, with all of the mental health things.
We talk about legacy, and what I'm reading on the website in talking about Bethany's legacy in the words of the writer of this post is about the transformation of lives of victims of the disease through awareness and that environment that you talked about to provide evidence-based treatments. And this foundation allows us to learn more about ways to participate in that wherever we are in this part of our life journey. What do you want us to remember most about your daughter?
I don't know. I want you to remember that she was a fabulous being and that you are too. And that the things that go on in your mind because of depression are not reality, right? They're not what everybody else really is thinking. You need to know that you are loved. Everybody needs to know how much they are loved. And I hope that everybody can remember good things about how much Bethany wanted them to have good things. Right? She's one of the people when she died by suicide, she did leave notes. She left personalized notes for specific people, and they were all very encouraging and very much about the love that she had and how much she wanted them to know they were loved.
So well, hearing your words,
it's good for you.
As I say, hearing that in your words and in your voice lets all of us know that there is, and it's certainly your determination to have this be as positive an event as it can be, in even if she's not there to see it, in her memory and in her legacy and for the world at large as well.
We thank you so much.
Thank you for having us on your show and for speaking out about suicide prevention. And thank you for everyone who listens.
More information on the Bethany Ann Galdez Foundation, you can go to our website, first off, whfr.fm. It's going to be right up on there on the playlist module, which you'll see right there. Or it is B.A. Galdez Foundation. That's B-A-G-A-L-D-E-S Foundation.org for more on Bethany's story and the foundation and their work. Kathryn Galdez, executive board member, and Maria Evans, clinical therapist, part of sort of that other half of the foundation that we had a chance to talk about. We appreciate having you so much on today's edition of the WHFR Journal.
Thank you for having us.
Take your favorite non-commercial radio station with you wherever you go with the WHFR radio app, now available for free in the Google Play Store. After installing the app, you can listen to WHFR live to your Android device anywhere in the world. There are also articles posted by WHFR staff and the latest updates to the WHFR schedule. WHFR To Go, free delivery, now available on the WHFR app and the Google Play Store.
Welcome back. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. Pleased to be with you this Friday afternoon here at WHFR, making waves. And obviously, a lot of very important topics to talk about as we're rounding out the month of September. But don't forget, we've got music on the way coming up at the top of the hour, 2 o'clock. Kitty Love taking us on a trip down Highway 61 down to the Delta for some blues for your Friday afternoon here on WHFR. All right. Well, Susan, let's see. We've still got some time and certainly more important things to talk about on the program today. And we welcome back to the station, certainly a guest we've had before and always doing great work on campus for our students and obviously sort of appropriate and fitting for our theme today of the program on the WHFR Journal.
Yes, thank you, Alan. And it is a powerful series of topics that we're discussing in dealing with rounding out September as Suicide Prevention Month. Earlier in the month, there was a specific week dedicated to suicide prevention. You've probably seen public service messages and so on. And we were so grateful to have had our first discussion for the younger teens, the younger members of our community. But our college and campus community, certainly no exception to the potential potential for depression, potential for mental illness, and potential for suicide. So we wanted to bring in our experts here locally, as you mentioned, Alan, with SOS, Student Outreach and Support, Dr. Brenda Hildreth, who has been a regular on our show in the past, and we're so happy to have you back, Dr. Hildreth.
Thank you.
In talking about the subject as it relates to support for our students, which is what SOS truly is, but when we bring in the aspect of counseling availability and so on, I know that there are some very specific things that are here by way of resources for our students at the college and for some or even parents or family members that might be listening to this discussion. How about if we start there about what is available, what resources are up and running and ready for students to connect with. And then perhaps from there, we'll process over into some of the things that you're actually seeing in terms of higher need during this time of season. And thanks again for being here today.
Oh, my pleasure. The number of requests that we're receiving from students for all of our services has increased. And that includes the funding that we give that's over and above what they receive from financial aid, the requests for workshops that will help them to study better, but especially for the mental health. And the mentor, we're very grateful that the instructors are tuned in, and they are some of our most frequent referrals, people who refer us students because they're on the front lines. And so they may read a paper that a student has written and see that there may be some issues going on, and they will refer the student to the counseling department. And the counseling department is the main resource on campus for students who are having mental health issues.
Now, Dr. Hildreth, it kind of takes me in the direction of a question. It is, in your opinion, do you think it's more greater awareness or greater need? And those are kind of two different things. I mean, I know we've seen a lot with athletes, certainly in the athletic world, where athletes have been more willing to talk about mental health issues and the pressure that they're under. And certainly that applies to any student at any age. Or is it a combination of those, in your opinion?
I think it's a combination of both. There is a move across the country on campuses to have special programs that are focused on depression and anxiety, which are the two leading mental health issues for college students. And as a result of that, our students are better educated. And so they know that we are on campus to help them, you know, the counseling departments. And so I think that really makes a big difference in the number of students that we're seeing for that reason now.
I know you mentioned the concept of being available for a variety of different things for our students, and you said about depression and anxiety, two separate but equally upsetting and potentially very dangerous types of things. When somebody is in need of a counselor, is in need of some support, you mentioned teachers tend to be on the front lines, but do you get students themselves just sort of self-identifying as having an increase in depressive behavior or depressive thoughts or an increase in anxiety, and they come to you on their own? Or is it typically pretty much sort of a referral kind of a thing?
We are seeing more students that are coming on their own. And compared to the past. And that's a good thing. And I say that's a good thing because there is still a large segment of the American population that sees mental illness as something that's been made up. They don't believe in it, especially for the two leading mental health issues, which are anxiety and depression. survey was recently done where they found that a third of the people surveyed did not believe that anxiety was a mental illness. It is a mental illness. It can be diagnosed. And 22% of those people didn't believe that depression was a real mental illness. So those are the people that make our job harder. And very often it can be parents, unfortunately, because the student will come in and say that I'm seeking help, but my mother or my father does not agree or believe in psychologists or counselors. So that lets me know that that student is on his own, so to speak. If I make a referral and the parent has to pay for that referral, they're not going to get that service. And so that's what I mean when I say that it makes our job a little harder.
So walk us through that process a little bit from the perspective of, just sort of following it from the beginning. A student who either self-identifies or is referred to your office. What are those steps? And I think probably the goal here is to try to like destigmatize the whole thing and show really, what it would be like for them in that situation.
Right, because you notice that I try to use mental health, not a mental disorder or anything like that, because those are the negative words that people hear and associate with mental health. But there's nothing wrong with trying to get things in line that may be in your life. Just because you see a counselor does not mean that you have a mental disorder. And it's hard for people and our students sometimes to make that, to separate those two.
That makes sense. I'll tell you, Brenda, anytime I refer a student, the first thing that I say to the student who says, I don't know, I don't think this is for me. The first thing I say, and I'm very happy to share it and admit it, is I say, I've used our school's services. They're wonderful. So if I can do it, you can do it. I'm willing to share. And so trust me, there's support there. And why not utilize, why not take advantage of it, and it's a number of things and simple things like time management, tests, test anxiety, skills that can help you identify different styles of learning so that you can be better equipped to pass classes because there's a stressor right there. And then just the opportunity to, when stressors do come into someone's experience, college isn't easy. It's not meant to be, a breeze, but it is certainly also not meant to cripple one's ability to be who they are. So the concept of managing stress and then all of the other things that come with it. Those are, there's a huge wave, a huge variety, and we certainly don't want to imply that every one of those is equal to each other. But when it gets to a point where it is upsetting sleep, where it is upsetting the ability to be sort of one's own character or to process and to function well and to want to be social and those kinds of things, we know that at that point, retreating is not going to be a helpful solution. And making
right.
So, your office is so important.
Yes. So we try to make those steps as simple as possible. If they decide they want to see someone on campus to help with a mental health issue, all they have to do is contact the counseling department, and the associate dean will select one of the counselors to meet with that student, set up an appointment. We will do the appointment in person, or we will do the appointment online. We leave it up to the student as to which one they prefer. We will meet with the student sometimes a couple of times, and during those initial meetings, we're evaluating the student to see if this is a person that just needs some support, maybe some learning skills, or does it look like it might be something that is going to be long-term, needs to be diagnosed so that they can get a longer-term treatment from a professional. So that's usually determined during the first one or two visits.
And we would be remiss in not mentioning the specifics of that first step. The student outreach and support organization here, the office here on campus, is available during the fall semester, Monday through Friday from 8 to 4:30 p.m., 313-845-9757. That's 313-845-9757. Or actually, probably just as easy, go to hfcc.edu and in the search box, just type SOS for student outreach and support. SOS and search, and it'll take you right to a link where you're able to get a hold of that office and hopefully become involved. Now, Dr. Hildreth, is this something that certainly as we've sort of worked our way back to a new normal, whatever this new normal is this something that seems to have changed over the last 2.5 to 3 years with all of the additional pressures of COVID or social media anxiety and all those other things? Is just trying to see trends and as I mentioned earlier, just that greater awareness and greater willingness to ask for help when needed.
Well, we're definitely seeing more students who are coming to us because of mental health issues. And I don't know if that was the result of the pandemic. I would suspect it was, because the pandemic, it just did so much damage in so many areas. I mean, people lost jobs. That can be very stressful. That can be very frightening. People lost relatives, you know, to death. And so it was pretty devastating for a lot of our students. And so it's no surprise that we would see an increase in the number of students that were coming to us.
Yeah, that makes sense. Again, when we are focusing on the process of support and getting to a point where we can kind of turn things around, do you see those students that come in, do you see them tending to stick with this process? Do they visit multiple times in a semester? Is it something that you, again, refer over to another area if the need arises, length of relationship, I guess, with the SOS and particularly with the counseling area? What are you seeing with that, and has that changed in your experience over the years?
There are more students that come to me for the mental health issues that will see me consistently, but there are still a lot of students who will come to me. They'll see me maybe one or two times, and even though we may make another appointment, they kind of disappear. But they will come back, you know, maybe at the middle of the semester, because things have bubbled up again, and so they need to talk to someone, which is fine, because in that case, I'm able to monitor them and remind them of any referral that I may have, and they know that we're there for them, and so that gives them a little sense of security. That's those students who just come periodically. They're coming when they need to, and that's okay.
You mentioned a couple of times about other things, factors that make your job harder. And once you talked about support systems or lack of support systems from students that may express a need or a concern or a crisis, and they're not getting taken seriously from family or friends as being a big one. What can we do as a community of supporters for these young and not so young students? They're not all traditional age students that we're talking about here. And, the older you get, sometimes the more and different responsibilities you have to worry about, which can make that even harder. So what can we do as a community to support those people that are not, for whatever reason, taking the step to seek some help?
The main thing, and I think that this is happening slowly but surely, but is to break down that whole myth. Seeing a therapist or a counselor means that there is something wrong with you, that you are a weak-minded person, that you can snap out of it if you really wanted to, that you can't always snap out of it if you want to. And also to let them know that just because you're coming to see a counselor doesn't mean that you have been sentenced to have therapy for the rest of your life, you know. Yeah, usually the students who come to us, if we don't refer them out, then that means that we can probably help them improve whatever the barrier or the problem may be, their presenting problem, within a few weeks.
And again, to reassure for those who may have been or living in an environment where there is sort of that reluctance or some remnants of that stigma there, this is not something that shows up on your transcript and follows you the rest of your way. Just reassurance
it's not
about confidentiality.
On your permanent record.
There you go. Yes, indeed. Turning away from that for a second, and I know we've talked about a lot of these things before, this Office of Student Outreach and Support here at Henry Ford College. Some of the other main projects and points of emphasis going on at this moment in time, this particular semester?
There is. We're constantly providing the three main services, and we're talking about the mental health. But in addition to that, we also provide the students with learning workshops, and those workshops, there are about four of them. They can help students who have problems taking notes. We can help show them how they can improve that skill. We can help them to improve their time management. Very often that can be a main source for the stress that they may come in and say that they're experiencing. And we can help with general stress management. So there's those are under the umbrella of helping them to improve their learning skills. Also test taking. We do a workshop for that. But the most popular, I believe, is the additional funding that we make available to students. And we have three main funds that are available to students. The first is the book stipend, and that's for new students who are coming in. And we try to make sure that as many instructors know about this as possible, because we realize that a lot of new students coming in on campus, they don't know, their parents don't know the schedule for even applying for financial aid. And so they may do it late. And as a result, their financial aid may not be completely processed by the time they start classes. So if they come to me, I will buy all of their books as long as they have applied for, financial aid. And even if they don't receive financial aid, we just write that off. You know, we don't go after them and try to get the money back. So that's the book stipend. We also have Halt Strong, which is our emergency fund, and we will provide students with up to $500 for minor financial situations they may be experiencing that can be taken care of for $500 or less. So that can be a bill. That can be if they're trying to buy uniforms. A lot of our programs like culinary arts, the nurses, and they need uniforms. And so we will help them to buy those kinds of things, as well as their books. And then there's Perkins, which is probably the one that gives the most money. And again, that money can be used for anything that will keep them in school. If they're trying to take a summer class that's coming up, then they can apply for Perkins and use that money for that. They can use it for tuition fees, books and bills and car payments, a number of things. They just have to contact us to see if they are qualified.
That's a lot.
I can't tell you the number of times someone says I couldn't make it to class because my car was in the shop and things like that. Just like a lot of things in life, being there, being present in the moment is really a big part of putting yourself in the best position to succeed. At least that's my opinion. So, yeah.
And those can be very stressful, you know, and so we're helping with that also.
Yeah, what you just said, Alan, oh my gosh, so true. And pointing out one thing, you know, my car's in the shop, I can't afford to get it out, or I have a flat tire, I can't afford to replace the tire. So then that leads to a different stress, because then they can't get the child to the babysitter, or then they can't get to the class to take the test, and then they're anxious about the test anyway. And so I think that one-offs, you know, one of these things at any given time is hard enough, but when they start to stack, and often that's what I'm hearing from students, I can't keep my head above water. It's just, it's one thing after another. I literally had a student yesterday who talked about how she just can't catch a break from the chaos of that is life, as she called it. And that's real stuff. You know, that's real stuff that you shouldn't have to do on your own. And thankfully, right, here at Henry Ford College, you don't have to. We have support from SOS, from counseling, with the counseling itself, the workshops, which are invaluable, and then that emergency funding. So, Brenda, we know how busy you are and your team, and we know how hard what you do is, but we're so grateful to have you, be part of the solution for success here at Henry Ford College, which is, I think, a part of the testament of the holistic approach that we use when supporting our students.
Thank you. And another resource, and it's not on campus, but it's available to students. I always want to give an alternate for when counselors are not on campus. They can call 988. And this is a new number that is now available. It was implemented in July of this year. And so that is another resource that they can use.
24-hour-a-day suicide and crisis lifeline. Yeah, 988. As you mentioned, something relatively recent. Certainly more than welcome, and probably more than a little overdue. Another great resource that's available above and beyond when we talk about campus life. Brenda Hildreth is the coordinator of student outreach and support. Dr. Hildreth, always a pleasure talking to you on the WHFR Journal. Susan, anything left, or are we just getting ready to go?
Yeah, I think
I know we're running out of time. I'm just keeping an eye on the clock.
I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, we really could talk for hours and talk through so many different stories and scenarios, but we recognize that every single one is a little bit different. And we recognize that everybody's sort of coming into this information at a different place, a different level of stress or anxiety, or whatever they're suffering through we're battling from. And it's just wonderful to see the community of students that support each other in so many of these things, but also knowing that we have these resources not only in our community, our campus community, but literally right down the hall in some cases here at Henry Ford College. So we recognize the importance of all of this. Suicide Prevention Month is a tough thing to talk about, but it gives us an opportunity to shed light on something that, as you've established today, Brenda, is often misunderstood or misdirected, miscommunicated. And often that, I think, comes from fear and ignorance or lack of the willingness to want to open up and talk about something that powerful. But we appreciate the fact that you're here to do that with us. And we've got tons of support information, as Alan mentioned, on the website through SOS here at Henry Ford College.
And I know I gave some numbers websites before. Is there any like particular one that you would recommend for students for that first step, Brenda?
Perfect.
For the first step, and if they're looking for long-term assistance, the problem that a lot of our students have is that they don't have insurance that will cover mental health issues. And so that alone is a major problem. So what I always keep in mind that some students cannot pay for a private therapist. So we can always refer them to Wayne County Mental Health Services. And the number for them is 800-241-4949. That's Wayne County Mental Health.
800-241-4949, if that's correct. Yes.
And once they call, a really nice person is going to answer. They're going to ask quite a few questions, but the purpose of the questions is so that they can find an agency that is the closest to the person's home, those kinds of things. They're trying to figure out what information is going to help them the most. And so that's my first go-to. The second, and through the county agency, they will send students to programs like Access, to Hygera. Those are programs that I highly recommend. Hygera has offices all over the place, and they're very reputable. And there are a couple of private offices that we will refer students to who have the ability to pay. And maybe that office is a little bit closer. And so I will work with them to see what is best for them.
Thank you so much for that information. And of course, to start the on-campus portion of it, as mentioned, you can simply go to hfcc.edu and in the search bar type SOS and search there. It'll take you to the Office of Student Outreach and Support, where you can find out about all sorts of student services at Henry Ford College, including the counseling office. Meet the counselors virtually there and get a hold of them, and hopefully get yourself on a path to deal with any issues you are dealing with. So once again, hfcc.edu and search for SOS or counseling, or you can call 313-845-9757. That's 313-845-9757 for the Student Outreach and Support Office here at Henry Ford College. Dr. Hildreth, once again, a pleasure as always having you on the WHFR Journal. Susan, I wish we had more than an hour a week. This would be the greatest radio station ever, even better than it already is, if it was just us on the air talking about important things going on in our community. How does that sound?
It does. It sounds very important, like you said. And if anybody listening heard something that might benefit you and you're not a student of HFC or you're not, of a certain age, that's okay. This is information that is important for everybody to hear, to talk about, to listen to. And Dr. Hildreth gave some great resources there for those outside of the campus community. So,
and again, for those not in the campus community who may be dealing with issues, things we've talked about all throughout the hour today, the 988 hotline. That is the brand new 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, is a great first step for wherever you are, especially if you don't have immediate access to these resources here on campus.
There it is. Thank you, Brenda, for your time today. And thank you, Alan, as always, for an important discussion.
All right. Kitty Love is up next. We'll have some music. Oh, sorry. Yeah, thank you for that, Brenda. This is WHFR Dearborn 89.3, online at WHFR.fm. Making Waves. Have a great week. Highway 61 coming up next here on WHFR Making Waves.
That's where my baby stays.